Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contract Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. My guest on the show today is author John Jantz. He wrote the cult classic a lot of you know called Duct Tape Marketing, but he's written many others, including The Ultimate Marketing Machine and The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur. Today, we talk about how to adapt your marketing strategy for the economic headwinds it's about to face. Look, the market around you may be slowing down, but that doesn't mean your business has to. Let's set you, your brand, and your lead generation up for success and dive right in with John Jantz.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, where we unpack the systems, tactics, and skills you need to take your fast-growing contracting business to the next level.
If you're here to learn what it takes to scale up, work less, and increase profitability, you've come to the right place.
Stay tuned to learn what separates the new breed of contractor from the old school, and welcome to your ultimate guide on the business of contracting.
John Jantz, welcome to Contractor Evolution. It is really good to have you. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me.
So most of our listeners are going to be pretty familiar, certainly with duct tape marketing, but others as well. But for maybe the unacquainted Contractor Evolution listener, can you just give like a brief overview, synopsis of the books you've written and then the work that you're up to now?
Yeah, so I started my agency actually 30 years ago. So if they've heard of me, it's maybe because I've just been around for a long time. But I have written 7 books in the marketing realm. The one I'm most known for is Duct Tape Marketing. And really, the genesis of that actually was kind of my approach. I worked for an agency for about 5 years, jumped out, did my own thing, hustled work, no real plan. But, you know, I eventually found I loved working with small, mid-sized businesses, but they could be kind of frustrating in the way I'd been trained, at least. Same needs and challenges, never the same budgets or even attention spans. So I just said to the world one day, I'm going to create a systematic approach where I can walk into that next prospect and say, look, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what you're going to do. Here are the results we hope to get. And here's what it costs. We're going to install a marketing system. And to my surprise, I found that in trying to solve my great frustration, I actually tapped into what is still today one of the greatest frustrations with small businesses. It's hard to buy marketing services. It's getting harder because there's some new platform every week. Somebody's pitching the idea of the week. Let's face it, most business owners don't get into growing a business because they know a lot about marketing. So, you know, the fact that somebody was going to come in and say, look, we're going to install a system and here's what it's going to cost, I think was music to their ears. I branded it and called it Duct Tape Marketing. That seemed to really resonate with folks. And so then that became, it's the name of my business. I have a podcast as well. It's the name of my podcast. It was the name of my first book. But essentially, we have been, essentially doing this same idea of bringing marketing systems that are based in strategy before tactics, which I know we're going to talk about, to businesses all over the world. We actually even the approach was so effective, we actually license our approach to other agencies. We have about 400 agencies that have gone through our licensing program.
So that's a perfect segue. This idea of strategy before tactics, I think, is a really important one to hit at the top. I wonder if you can, in your own words, just explain, like, first of all, what's the difference? I know that seems like a basic question, but I think people mix this up all the time. No. What's the difference, and why is that such an important principle to hold?
Yeah. So the way I explain the difference is tactics are what you are going to do. the strategy is really how you're going to do it. So it's really a matter of, you know, the reason strategy has to come before tactics is because there's so many things you could do, I suppose, in marketing, but if they aren't based on what you're trying to achieve with your strategy, you're going to waste a lot of time. There's going to be a lot of things you shouldn't be doing. So I'll give you an example because, again, I probably haven't cleared it up very much for anybody with just that definition, but we have a remodeling contractor that we worked with that brought us in. They couldn't differentiate. You know, everybody was like, well, one remodeling contractor is like the next. Well, it turned out that they just hired the best people. The owners themselves were just very, very service driven, and they just cared so much about their customers. And it came through in everything they did. I mean, their people, you know, made the difference in their clients' lives. And so, the strategy we developed was to actually create an employer brand. In other words, talk so much about what an awesome place it is to work that became kind of the messaging for them. I mean, that's a That's an attractive marketing message. As everybody, a lot of your listeners know, finding skilled labor is pretty tough right now. And so it was also a great market to help them fill that void as well. So our strategy was to, you know, be seen as the number one place to work in the industry. Then the tactics became, okay, we need to put in an awesome recruiting system. We need to change our messaging. We need to actually show our people on Facebook. So those are the tactics that really kind of drive the strategy.
Can you talk a little bit about your approach or philosophy when it comes to building a marketing strategy and then building an engine to help drive it? And I like the example that you just gave me. Maybe you have a few more. The way I would set this up is this, and I'll talk about this theme I think throughout the episode, but To my eye, most of our contractors that we work with have, whether they want to admit it or not, have really, really benefited from a very, very strong 10 years of market pressures. There's not enough housing. There's too many people. There's not enough workers. There's like a huge amount of demand. So they have been uniquely positioned to enjoy a rising tide when it comes to kind of like the lead gen and sales part of their business.
Sure.
Now that doesn't by the way, that doesn't make being a home builder or a landscaper or a painter an easy career choice or an easy business to grow. There's a ton of inherent flaws and challenges and roadblocks therein. But I will say, in terms of like getting customers, like you guys have had it easier than a lot of other industries. I will make a statement. You can light me up in the comments, but that is as close to a fact as I can find when it comes to this. So that being the case, it is fair to say that a lot of listeners, not all of them, but some of our listeners are maybe like more junior when it comes to marketing. And I think the more mature ones would like be quite willing to admit that to themselves. You know what? I know a bit about it, but I don't know a ton. So can you just maybe give us some salient points you can pull from the duct tape marketing system, other stuff you've done, but like what is your philosophy when it comes to moving from, I do a few tactics here and there that I kind of stitch together to now I have an overarching strategy that leads my business.
Sure. So we break marketing strategy into three components. The first one is brand strategy. The second one is growth strategy. And the third one is customer strategy. And those are very distinct parts, but they're all marketing. So the first thing we always start with, and it's probably one of the biggest mistakes I see people make, is I hang my sign out. I say I'm an electrical contractor. Anybody who like needs to plug something into a wall is my ideal customer. Well, we all know that's not true, right? I mean, there are people that always want a deal, or they're looking for the cheapest thing, or they want to halfway DIY it. And you know, I mean, we've all the kind of horror stories that somebody would say, "Oh yeah, I want everybody but those clients." So narrowing their focus to like who do we want to serve? Who are we best suited to serve? You know, let's talk about those folks. And it's typically anybody I work with. We find the top 20% of their clients and say, how do we find more people like that? Because, you know, there's a great, you know, fit with them. Now, one of the keys to this brand strategy is when we go in and work with pretty much any new client, we want to try to find, have they captured what their true unique value is? I mean, something that they bring to the market that they may not even understand, or they may not even appreciate, but that we can really use as leverage to say, well, we're the people that do X. If you want X, you know, we do that better than anyone else. Instead of, hey, we do all these services for anybody that wants them, we may actually kind of narrow what they offer and who they offer it to, because that is really how you build a strong brand for those people that are looking for that thing. Obviously, it's got to be value that they're looking for, but for people that are looking for that thing. So that's kind of phase one. Then we try to understand the customer journey. You know, this is something that, you know, there are very few businesses that can run an ad, you know, attract a customer, and voila, everybody's happy, right? I mean, but, you know, today, the way people make purchases, if I'm going to spend 150 grand or something on redoing my kitchen, you know, there's going to be some research I'm going to do. There's going to be a journey. I'm going to talk to several people. I'm going to find out if you're trustworthy. So, you know, understanding the way that your ideal client buys and the journey that they want to go on, and then making sure that you're helping or at least positioning your business to guide that journey, to build the trust, you know, to have the buying experience stay just as high as everything that led them to that. You know, those are all part of how a strategy then is executed. Because, you know, I always tell people strategy is the most important thing until we get it. Then the most important thing is the execution of the strategy. Otherwise, it's just words. And so, you know, those are the things that we go to work on very early on. And then the third part is the customer strategy. I mean, there's so much. You mentioned the idea that a lot of folks in this business get repeat clients and word of mouth. And a big reason for that is this is a high ticket, high trust business in a lot of cases. And so, you know, the fact that somebody says, oh, yeah, I had them in our house. They were awesome. They did exactly what they said on time. It's like, well, okay, that's going to go a long way towards me wanting to hire them. So we want to work on that kind of the brand, the growth strategy is how we're going to attract, and then the customer strategy, which is how we're going to retain and generate referrals. So it's that complete end-to-end journey.
Love that. Brand, growth, customer, very, very simple way to think about it. Keying in on something I had said earlier, I don't want to come off as tone deaf when I say you guys have had it easy, because there is some emerging concerns, certainly in our membership here at Breakthrough Academy and certainly with our listeners on Contract Revolution, around what could be called a changing market. And I'm always reluctant with our content to be too kind of like doom and gloomy and too clickbaity. So I want to make sure I'm nuanced in the way that I describe this. I'm not saying that we are 100% headed into a recession, but I am acknowledging what I'm sensing on the wavelengths, in headlines, in markets, etc. And so that's a thing, meaning it may for the next few years not be as easy as it was for the last 8 to 10 years. That may be a thing. I'm wondering, and I'm John, you're not an economist. I'm not going to hold you to this, but what are you hearing about these economic headwinds? What are you hearing from members? Clients? What are you seeing yourself? What is your overall assessment on where the market's at right now and where we could be heading over the next 2 years?
Well, first off, I want to let you off the hook on the doom and gloom thing. I mean, it's really easy to be very busy and lose money. So, I mean, just the fact that people have, you know, had an easy time with business coming in, that doesn't mean they're actually making any money doing it too. So there is that element. But in terms of, you know, contractors in general are in a market that a lot of the factors are out of their control. Mortgage rates, availability of housing stock, even, you know, consumer sentiment. A lot of times somebody's going to go out and get a home equity loan to do some sort of big project in their house. They've got to feel pretty confident that that's a good investment in their house. So there's a lot of things that are out of control. But I think that, you know, I've been in this so long that I think what you see is anytime that there's change and uncertainty, let's face it, we're in a kind of crazy election cycle that we have every 4 years that, you know, creates a lot of concern and angst, for people as well. What I have seen is that the companies that actually use opportunities like this, if we are indeed going to have a downturn, the sounds so self-serving, but I've just seen it play out, and statistic after statistic proves this. The companies that actually double down on their marketing during these periods come out of them so much better off than folks that go, oh, we've got to tighten the belt. You know, let's cut our ads. Let's do this. Because there is still going to be demand out there. And what happens is you cut back your marketing and all of a sudden you're not getting that demand. We've had clients where we've convinced them that, no, now's the time to go on radio. Now's the time to, you know, do some things that maybe we weren't even doing because everybody else is cutting back. And so, you know, we're going to actually capture that demand. It might be less demand than what we're experiencing today, but it's still going to be out there, and it's going to be the chance for us to steal kind of market share from competitors.
That was something I wanted to ask you about. It always seems to me like there's two competing philosophies in a situation like this. One is play it safe, or you know, cut expenses, be conservative. The other is hit the gas, which is what you're describing. I wonder if you can just say a little bit more about this whole question, this whole fork in the road, and how people should think about this. I mean, maybe an initial question is how you would know better than me, how common is it for people to truly kind of like cut the legs out under their marketing and reduce their spend by 50% or more? Is that a pretty widespread pattern that you see in the small business world?
It's very widespread. I mean, a lot of businesses still view marketing as a cost, as an expense. We have been teaching for years that marketing is actually an investment. Done right, it's an investment in your business and in your asset. And so the idea that, you know, those folks that are out there kind of going, oh, things are getting a little tighter, I don't know what the direction is, I'm going to cut back to like try to save for a rainy day. Unfortunately, you know, that's the view of cutting costs. And I'm not saying, I mean, you obviously have to be responsible. A lot of times people will do everything they can to keep people, you know, that they've hired and attracted. But what we have found is you can take advantage of those people that are just going to cut back on cost by upping your investment.
How can that be the case? I'm actually just curious about the psychology here. I live in the marketing and sales world, so it seems obvious to me, but it's hard for me to understand how someone could look at marketing as just a cost. Like the payback seems like the payback loop seems very like very, very clear to me. Of all things you could spend money on, this is like it's the most obvious as an investment if it's done well.
Yeah.
What do you think is going on in the mindset of people when they think that way?
Well, I think unfortunately, and we've seen this time and time again, they've wasted a lot of money on marketing.
Right.
And so it's felt quite often.
So they're bitter.
like a cost. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, we hired this company to do that and we got nothing. I mean, we hear half the people that hire us, we have to go through the last three people that they have worked with because they didn't take a strategic approach. You know, they were selling the tactic that they had in their bag, and they bought it. You know, SEO is one of my favorite to pick on, you know, as a tactic that somebody comes along and says, oh, you need SEO and we're going to charge you $5,000 a month and we're going to do all this voodoo. Trust us, we'll send you a report once a month. And, you know, 6 months go by and they're like, I don't know what we got for that. It doesn't seem like we have any more business for that. And I think that that's really jaded a lot of folks to be very cautious in this marketing spend. And also, let's face it. I mean, they don't really know that much about marketing. And so, you know, it's what they hear, what they read, what somebody tells them. They go to an industry conference and you know, somebody's saying, oh, we did this on TikTok and it was amazing, you know, and so, you know, they kind of charge out and do the next thing. And so it's easy to kind of, and also, you know, sometimes they, you know, they do the next thing for 2 weeks, right? And it's like on the next thing. So it's very easy to waste a lot of money in marketing. And I think that that's why people have been burned and feel like they don't know, you know, what to do, what not to do.
It makes them cynical. I'm going off script here, but like, why are there so many jokers in like the marketing service provider space? Because look, I mean, there's other expenses that we have on our chart of accounts where, you know, there's better and worse and there's, you know, but there isn't this sort of like onslaught of incompetence and yes, poor professionalism and what have you. When it comes to the small business, like marketing service provider category, I don't know, man. It seems like 70% of the people out there are either clueless or in some cases, like actually kind of shady. What is this, just like drawing the worst people? Like how do you explain this?
I think there's a couple of dynamics. I don't think it's marketing is drawing bad people. I think it's the bar to entry is pretty low. you know, nobody has to pass an exam or do anything to call themselves a marketing consultant. I think it's pretty easy to make marketing seem more complex than it is. And so, you know, it's kind of easy to sell that complexity, right, or at least, you know, make people feel like, oh, I need you to, you know, solve this for me. You know, what somebody needs to hire. So, I mean, I always tell people, don't even talk to somebody if they're not talking about strategy first. Like, what's our strategy? You know, because half the time when we come in and work with somebody and help them develop a new strategy, we start telling them what they shouldn't be doing anymore, because they've been doing a lot of things that No one's orchestrating it. They've hired this company here, this company here, this company there. Those companies aren't even really talking to each other. And so a lot of what we provide is not only the strategy, is you do need somebody who's orchestrating. We kind of position ourselves almost as a fractional CMO or fractional marketing manager, you know, where we're going to come in, we're going to understand your business, but we're also going to be that one that advocates for marketing in your organization, that advocates for the customer, because those things are lacking. And when you just hire vendors to do things, you're never really going to get the cohesive integrated plan that's going to get you some long-term results.
So I have a question here, which is, let's just play with a theoretical scenario. Let's just say that the market continues to soften. We don't get the interest rate lowerings that we're hoping for. Maybe we get less and fewer and further between. Let's say, I don't know, the election gets really wonky and the market, like, let's just, I'm not going to go.
Wait a minute. Gets wonky?
It already is. Sorry. Gets more than it already is. I'm not saying full-blown scorched earth, but let's just say that we're in for a rough ride here over the next 2 years. Let's just play out a business cycle. I would love to get your perspective on how a small business's, say a contractor's strategy ought to change, ought to morph for that environment. And maybe we can hit it at these three different levels. Talk about it at the brand level and the messaging that you put out there. Talk about it at the growth level and the advertising that we do and the way that we get eyeballs on our stuff. And then maybe talk about it at the customer retention referral level as well. I think there's a lot that we could unpack there.
Yeah. So the key word that our customer journey is something we call the marketing hourglass, and there's seven stages: know, like, trust, try, buy, repeat, and refer. And what we really get people to do is to double down on that know, like, trust. That you know, if you've been selling on price, if you've been selling because the market is just, you know, they'll hire anybody that'll show up, which, you know, we have had some of that. What's going to become important when if things turn down a little bit, because even with the media like doom and gloom that they like to sell, you know, there's still, so we have a downturn. That doesn't mean the market goes away.
Right.
There's still going to be significant demand, but we're going to be able to be choosier now as a buyer. And we are going to focus, what I've seen people focus on in downturns is we're going to focus on trust. If I'm going to invest in this, it better not go wrong. If I'm going to, you know, put my money in here and I feel like it's a little bit risky, I'm talking about the buyer, you know, then I'm going to really vet who I'm going to work with. I'm going to go with the trusted, most verified, most proven, contractor for, you know, the money. I may still be price conscious, but more than price conscious, I'm risk conscious. And so the companies that really focus on building that trusted brand, and in some cases kind of going up market out of the like low cost leader category, are the ones that end up not only surviving, but thriving sometimes in downturns.
Can you talk about some practical steps one might take? We are getting into tactics a little, but what are the things one would do to crank up the trust lever, to add points to that trust bucket in their business? Yeah. Is it installing a Google review thing? Is it more social proof on the website? Like what are the things?
Yeah, all of those things. I mean, are you a member of NARI? You know, have you won awards? Have all of your technicians been certified in whatever? I don't even need to know whatever is, but it's just those are trust badges, right? That you want to make sure you're displaying. Google reviews, no question, but I take it a step farther. I mean, there are lots of great ways to get your team involved in getting those reviews. Lots of people are trying to automate that process, but frankly, your technicians, that's as far as your company goes, that's the company, not the Google review machine. And so getting your technicians and your people involved in like, hey, can you review me? I had a garage door replaced not too long ago, and as the guy was great. I would have given him 5 stars, you know, no matter what. He was great. did the work perfect, was very, very personable. At the end, he said, look, my company runs a little contest that, you know, if we get these 5-star reviews, you know, my wife and I get a dinner, you know, if we win, you know, this month or whatever. Well, sure as heck, I'm going to give him a review now, right? I mean, so getting them involved and you know, the people in your organization involved, because that's the face of your company, you know, not your marketing, not your branding, not your advertising. It's your people. People are, you know, your best asset from a trust standpoint. So I kind of blathered on 3 or 4 things there, but they all kind of come under the bucket of, you know, testimonials from clients, actual projects done, reviews, getting your people, putting your people out front as the face of your, of your organization. I mean, those are all things that really go, they're part of the customer journey, frankly, but certainly they are a great way for you to turn up that stage of the customer journey.
So staying on the kind of the brand level here and really actually focusing on the messaging, you said something a second ago that has prompted this question about going up market. So I saw this ad. I'm going to do a tangent here and come back to the main point. But I saw this ad the other day. I'm seeing it a lot on TV and, I don't know, like online too. And it's from like a pizzeria here in Canada. It's called Pizza Pizza. It would be akin to like Little Caesars or Domino's. This isn't like a high end bougie place. Yeah. This is commoditized pizza. This is a pizza factory type brand. And they're doing this ad, which is very, I gotta say, it's quite clever. They're sort of doing this campaign around this idea of like fixed rate pizzas. And their whole angle this year is like, sure, we're going to keep the price of pizza the same. Everything else in your life is going up. Look at us. We care about you. We're going to make, you know, the same $6 large pepperoni pizza all year, and you can count on that. So that's like the angle. That's, you know, they obviously are working with smart strategists who have come up with this overall theme and idea, and they've, you know, run this into a campaign that I've now seen on TV a couple times. They're going with a sort of, I don't want to, maybe moving down market. They're kind of, they are selling on price. That's a decision they've clearly made to own and use in their advertising. You know, when it comes to contractors, which are very, very different businesses, would a message like that work, or are you entering a race to the bottom, and would you make the case to even go in the opposite direction? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, low cost is actually a strategy, but it's also one that, if you can't pull it off profitably, it's definitely a race to the bottom. So you have to be all in. I mean, there has to be something about your fulfillment, your delivery, who you hire. I mean, all of that's going to go into that, because here's the thing about positioning of a brand. There's a Dolly Parton quote that I use all the time when I'm trying to talk to people about brand is, and the quote is, figure out who you are and go be it. And that's really kind of what it comes down to from a branding standpoint. You don't necessarily go, oh, we're going to be like seen as the most glamorous brand of, you know, time, like all the luxury people are going to hire us and that's it. Unless you can pull that off. you know, it's not, branding is not what you say it is. It's what your customers or what the market says it is. It's just a matter of how do we amplify who we are and what we do best. So figure that out. If this pizza place, you know, they are actually conceding the $18 pizza. They're conceding the person that wants, you know, fresh mushrooms or whatever that, you know, I mean, they're basically saying you're not our customer. But if you're somebody who wants it cheap and doesn't really care that it's hard to tell the box from the pizza, then you're our person.
That's a great point. I love that line. I have to say, figure out who you are and go be it. I think it's great in your personal life too.
100%.
There is something interesting about that when it comes to branding. And we've spoken about this a lot on the show recently. I don't want to belabor the point, but you know, you can sort of sit in a boardroom and do the whole like different words on a post-it note on the wall exercise and talk about your core values and I see value. I've done that. We spent money on that. I get the value in doing all that. I'm not knocking it, but people can get a little bit abstract when and spend a whole bunch of extra time and money on this. And I like that way you framed it. It's like, no, fundamentally, like you and your business do a thing, whatever that thing That's is. Right. And you are made up of a group of people, whatever the mix of those personalities and values and backgrounds and ideas. And you know, it's made up of a team, and it is does exist in a certain market, and it does practice a certain trade. So it's like there is a lot of it that is kind of done for you already. And this isn't this idea of like reverse engineering and extrapolating the perfect brand and the perfect messaging, I think sometimes can be overplayed. It's like, look, just, sure. hey, walk up into the mirror and go look, and then that's yeah. who you are. So go be that sure. with a little bit more amplitude, a little bit more volume. And maybe there's a few tweaks you can make to the sales process or the messaging or the brochure to be more persuasive. Right. But at the end of the day, like you got to work with the DNA that you have.
That's right. That's right. And if you don't, I mean, that's one of the real problems is people sit around and say, here's what we ought to be. And what happens then is, you know, you stick with it for about a week because it's hard
yeah.
to be something you're not, right?
Yeah.
So absolutely. I'll give you an example. We had a tree service and, you know, they were kind of mid-market. I mean, their whole thing was we're local. We've been in business for three generations, you know, so they were kind of playing to the local market. We interviewed their customers. And by the way, that is what you should absolutely do to figure out who you are because they know better than you do. So we interviewed a dozen or so of their customers. We kept hearing over and over again, yeah, they cut the tree down. I mean, they had a truck, chainsaw, figured they would. But they showed up exactly when they said they were going to for the, you know, for the quote, for the job, you know, and then after they were done, they cleaned up the job site like immaculately. I mean, we heard those exact words time and time again. That's the problem that they were solving. The tree was sort of secondary. It's that in our lives, people don't show up on time. I mean, how many have got the like 8-hour window for the, you know, cable TV person, right? Or, you know, or you come home and like there's mud all over, they let the dog out. I mean, that's the problem they were solving. That's really who they were. So then we take that and it's not enough to say, oh, let's put that on our business cards. That'll be great. We'll show up when we say we will. We'll clean up the job site. That's the start. But then you put in the on-time guarantee for your appointment, you know, or you get, you know, X. Here's during the sales process, you put in the 37-point checklist that every technician shows, here's what we're going to do when we're done with the job. So that's how you take this idea of who you are, your brand promise, and you turn it into a strategy throughout the business.
How should our advertising, so I'm kind of moving to the growth level now, how should our advertising, to the extent that we advertise, change to fit this new theoretical business environment we may or may not be headed into? How do we advertise more efficiently when leads are more expensive and people, frankly, are spending less money on this kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, I mean, your listeners have a broad range. I mean, let's face it, there are some folks that are in very transactional businesses. You know, my basement's flooding. I'm decided I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to get a basement waterproofer to come out because I'm tired of it. So that person's probably not going to do a ton of research. Ads are very effective. I mean, that's for that type of thing. And so, you know, I believe you still need to be in that to capture the folks that have very high intent. They're going to do something. They're in the market to do something today. However, I think we need to tighten down our, you know, especially you know, you think about some of the technical aspects of Google Ads. Well, this kind of long term, you know, or long tail searches, you know, the really broad categories of ads. You know, it's very easy to waste money. It's even easier to waste money when the search intent is not as high. People aren't really going out there because they want to buy today or get this thing fixed today. But that's really where the kind of secondary component of understanding the customer journey, understand who you're targeting, understand your message of difference that's going to target that client and start really communicating that unique value is how you are going to attract, you know, more of the word of mouth, more of the folks, you know, from an SEO standpoint. I mean, we don't really do some of the technical SEO for our clients because we just produce content in a way that it's the voice of their strategy and they just get rankings because of it. All of those secondary things need to be in place. And then your ads will actually be more effective. You know, how many times have you done a Google search and you know, the top three results that come up and one of them has 24 reviews, one of them has 288 reviews, and one of them has 16 reviews. Right. Well, who are you going to call? You're going to at least start with that one. A, they showed up in the search results. B, they have, you know, social proof that people, you know, believe in them. And then C, well, lo and behold, under their ads, I see their website too. So it's that combination of things that really cascade to build trust.
Let's talk about the customer level for a minute. One thing that I'm hearing a lot from our members directly is just a question. It's how do I maintain customer loyalty? How do I maintain customer engagement and trust in a downturn? Hey, it's hard enough to get new people. I really, really want to hang on to the book of business that I have.
You bet. So a lot of that's mindset, frankly. You know, if you view your customers as transactions, you know, they're going to actually view you as a vendor. But if you spend the time and energy to build touch points, to build follow-ups, to build, you know, your champion customers, the ones that refer you, what are you doing for them? What are you holding the events for them? Are you doing special education for them? It takes time and effort. You've got to continue to wow them and stay top of mind and let them know you appreciate the business instead of just waiting for them to call you back.
Are there any, I'm going to call them like guerrilla tactics, and this is probably maybe outside of your comfort zone, but I have to ask, I'm like, is there stuff when things get a little bit tougher that a cagey contractor should go try? Is it BNI? Is it door knocking? Is it hiring a cold caller and scrubbing lists off the internet? Like, is there stuff available that is, you know, let's say a little more direct response, a little more like get results quickly in nature that you gravitate towards more?
Yeah, I mean, one of the challenges with some of those, you know, especially like the cold scraping of lists, I mean, are you going to respond to that?
No, I'm not.
I mean, exactly. And I think, unfortunately, the people that are, you know, are probably just price shoppers or they're, you know, they're not going to be your ideal customer. So that's, you run the real risk of that. I tell you what, we have a lot of success with, and I think it's terribly underutilized, even though I think it's making a little of a comeback, it's direct mail. You know, we will do direct mail into the exact target that we want to work in, zip codes, you know, whatever neighborhoods it might be. And I'm amazed at the results that it gets because it just, you know, it hits people in their home. A lot of times it sits around for, you know, a couple days. A little follow up on that is, you know, there's lots of ways to really pinpoint. So again, we work with a lot of remodeling contractors and we have every single one of them. We use a tool that's able to target the 100 houses around the one they're working on. And we'll bombard those people with a message of, hey, we're going to be here for a couple months. If anything goes wrong, here's the name of our, you know, project manager and his phone number. Call him 24/7. We want to be good citizens. They get a job or two every single time out of that.
The angle, like the actual angle of the direct mail piece is not necessarily an advertisement. It's more saying, hey, like we're going to be in the neighborhood. If there's issues, call us.
Yeah. We're good citizens. Do you like good citizens?
Interesting. Interesting. That's a really, really cool little ploy. I could see how that would work. And so even though it's like, hey, if you're frustrated about the noise, call this guy. It sort of like inadvertently gets leads and gets jobs for them every time.
100%.
That's really,
I mean, because people are like, yeah, I want my contractor to act like that for my neighbors too.
Have you thought about why it's making a comeback? I mean, a lot of people, it's so interesting, like these like
sure.
lead channels or these tactics, like they sort of come and go over time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like email was dead and then now email is all the rage again. And like, what, like, why is direct mail back, back on the mix?
Well, part of it is people like to say stuff is dead. I mean, I don't think email was ever actually dead, but people do like to say it. All that means is it's dead to me, right? What I used to do, how I used to spam people isn't working anymore. Same with like people say, oh, social media is dead. Well, it's not dead. It's the way you were using it. It's dead. But so these things constantly change. But I will say one of the things I think is benefiting direct mail is so many people left it. I mean, look at what you get in the mail anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I get a couple catalogs, but, you know, I don't get very much, you know, other mail. So it actually stands out and it's kind of unique because, short of, Pella Windows and some of those kind of national brands that, they've always hammered direct mail, everybody's gotten out of it.
A question for you about in-housing your marketing or third-partying your marketing. Yeah. You use the analogy in a lot of your work of like building a marketing engine. And as someone who works, leads a small but potent marketing team, I do know what that is. The engine is a very, very good analogy. I think that's why it's used a lot. It's reliable. Yeah. It can rev at different levels. It creates power in an output. It does take some inputs. You want to make it more efficient. Like if you've been in a good marketing team, it does actually feel like an engine. So there's a question, I think, about should I build this in-house, build out these capabilities in-house, which is going to require people, it's going to require expertise, sure. It's going to require a bunch of reading and research and learning, and it is in many ways more work, but it is also now something where it's like I own the engine. Another way to do it would be like work with a third party who can do some or all of the stuff for you, and then you're kind of renting the engine, or you're attaching your trailer to the engine and they're dragging you. How should business owners think about that fork in the road? Does one path make sense for one type of business, another for another? Like it's an important thing to get right, and I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I definitely have a thought on it, and it's really why we've built our model the way we've built it. I think that it's very hard for a business owner to build an entire marketing team, partly because they don't really understand fully how to. But it also, it just creates a whole nother level of management that they have to do.
Correct.
and don't necessarily want to do. Our model is, we like to think that we act as a trusted advisor for our clients. We come in, we work with them on strategy first. A lot of times we will then go into full implementation of the strategy, but I'm always an advocate for you do need a couple people internally. There are just things that I can't take job site photos. I can't put together the packets for the awards programs. I mean, you need somebody who really, truly understands your business that is working there, but let us manage that person so that you have kind of one point of contact, one orchestrator, as we like to call it, on your marketing. And we'll actually, if you've got a web, we've got a lot of folks that have had, they've got somebody doing ads and social in their website, but nobody's managing them. So we'll come in and say, look, we can work with your existing folks. We'll just get a lot more output out of them. We have instances where we've actually gone into an organization and it's, look, I'll find you a person. I'll train them. I'll embed them. It'll be your person. But now they're going to be doing the right things because we're going to instruct them. So, getting somebody that you can trust to do that level, I think is definitely the way to go. Now, as an organization, we have a remodeling contractor that's about a $50 million business now. I mean, they have a four-person marketing team that we helped them build. Wow. Because it made sense for them to have more of that, staff internally working on their behalf. But we still direct and manage that team. The contractor's a third-generation hammer swinger. He's no offense. He's built an amazing business, but he doesn't want anything to do with marketing because he's got a trusted advisor.
No, but I mean, that's still a very small team. I mean, four salaries and overhead, probably less than $500,000 a year, and spend maybe a little more depending on how senior they are. But it's not a pile of money for a business that large. And so I like this idea. You're kind of like, for most businesses, it makes sense to have something akin to like a marketing generalist, a marketing Yep. coordinator, a marketing manager who does need to be a bit of a jack of all trades where marketing is concerned, but they then work with a really good, really competent, specialized agency like you. And that's a nice marriage. Because you're right. I there's kind of two problems I want to help people avoid. One is you listen to like three marketing podcasts, you think, hey, this is really easy. I'm going to build this out internally and I'm going to hire. Listen, we've done this, so I can throw myself on the spear. I'm not too embarrassed to say this. We're going to hire this person, this person, this person, this person, and we're going to do content marketing. I read this book called Content Marketing and we're going to do that. And you get like 6 months into it and you realize like, man, this is like way more nuanced and difficult, and ever-changing. We're talking about algorithm updates. We're talking about new platforms. We're talking about trending stuff, that you, a news cycle that you have to stay in front of. Like, it's just, it's a really, really difficult thing. And you end up with this, a whole bunch of overhead that isn't particularly productive. And guess what? It's your fault because you're not a marketing leader. So that's a situation you want to avoid. The other one is I know I'm not an expert at marketing. I'm going to hire this out, but I actually know so little that I'm actually not even qualified to lead or guide the agency that I pay. And so if it ends up, frankly, to be a bit of a dumb lead, the deaf leading the blind situation, it's you have an incompetent or inexperienced business owner who is working now with an agency who's invoicing them $5,000 a month, $10,000 a month, whatever, and they're not even well trained enough to know if what they're paying for is good. That's 100%. Another situation that you want to avoid. And so we're trying to talk 100%. About how to thread the needle, and it is a tricky one for like a $3 million a year, $5 million a year, $10 million a year type business.
Yeah, you mentioned the word leadership, and I think that's what you're looking for, is marketing leadership. It can be fractional. I mean, there are amazing people out there that have lots of experience and maybe lots of experience in your industry. Viewing them as your marketing leader, you know, even if you call it a consultant, but their real job is to be an advocate for marketing inside your business. Maybe have a seat at the table of, you know, when strategy decisions are being made. We actually, with a lot of our clients, have built a tool we call a marketing P&L. It's not rocket science, but you know, a lot of the people, the way they keep their P&L, they can't actually extract marketing costs out of it. So we actually help them build one where we can actually see, here's what happened in the month. Here's the, you know, how much it cost us to acquire a customer. Here's the lifetime value of our customers. Here's our marketing return on marketing investment. And all of a sudden, you know, by us inserting ourselves into the finance role, let's face it, you know, we definitely become a trusted advisor, a very holistic trusted advisor, part of the leadership team. And I think that's what people should be looking for, is somebody. I'm not saying that it's easy to find, but that's what they should be looking for, is somebody that gives them the clarity and the confidence and the control of their marketing that's going to allow them, however they then spend budget, is going to allow them to feel like they're doing it right.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. That's a perfect segue into this final question I had for you, which is advice for finding, like searching for, finding and working with a third party. You know, our YouTube has over 11,000 subscribers. I think the show does about 40 or 50,000 downloads a month. So you're not going to be able to service all of them, even if you could, even if you wanted to. So there is, so for everyone else who's maybe needs to find a, you know, maybe it is a fractional CFO or CMO, maybe it is a media buyer, maybe it's a branding agency, maybe it's an all-in-one sort of marketing service provider that can help them. Going back to my earlier comment about there's a lot of jokers in this space, what advice would you give to a contractor who's on the hunt for one right now? And what really obvious and painful mistakes would you tell them to avoid?
So the first thing I would do is I would ask anybody that I was working with, asked to see their framework for developing strategy. And you, as the business owner, you know, don't go by tactics. You know, buy somebody who can take a step back. If you want to make a long-term growth investment in your business, finding somebody that you really connect with, that can, you know, certainly seems to have the experience, but also can demonstrate the experience and is not just there to say, well, we do these three things, so that's what we're going to sell you. Because that's really, you know, there are all kinds of that. That was 5-10 years ago, you know, the agency, you know, of the day was like, here's our package, package A, package B, or package C, which one do you want? And that really let, I mean, frankly, I'm not saying it wasn't effective. I mean, if you ran ads and you did a little SEO and you did some content, it was pretty easy to actually generate some business. But as things get a little tougher and, you know, generative AI is taking away SEO, the social networks aren't selling us all the data on their users anymore. It's going to get harder for advertising and SEO to be as easily as effective. And so having somebody that can help you build a strategy, build a brand, is going to be more important than ever. So insist that they at least show you their framework for that, or that they have a plan for that, before you really just say, okay, propose what you're going to do for me.
Hmm. That's a really great point. So that's a very functional question to ask. Hey, Mr. Third Party, can I see your framework for developing our strategy together? And then shut up and listen. Pay attention to what they show you on screen or in the presentation. Listen to the words that they say. If they're kind of dancing around or skating through a very fluffy answer, you're going to know. And if they give you a pretty concrete step-by-step, hey, this is how we develop strategy with our clients. Here are some examples of strategies we've developed with other clients, then you might be in stronger hands. And look, to your point about it, you know, these platforms are locking down their users' information a little bit more. You know, SEO is changing. It might be harder to advertise. I think, honestly, like for the planet, I know this is weird to say as a marketer, but I think it's maybe a good thing if our phones listen to us a little bit less and brands and corporations are, it's harder for them to track exactly our activities and behaviors online. I would welcome a few less creepy ads that are so incredibly targeted to me on the various platforms 100%. That I'm on. I think that's a good thing for the planet. So I'm all for it.
Yep, 100%.
John, let's leave it at that. I will ask you this. Where can people connect with you? What's kind of like your digital online footprint? If people want to read the books, if people want to connect with you or your agency, where do they do that?
So I have a page that we set up to give you some goodies, some free stuff. So if you just go to dtm.world, so DTM as in duct tape marketing, .world/growth. And you can kind of choose your adventure there. We have a couple things, couple paths you can go down if you want to find out more about the exact things we've been talking about on this show. As a contractor, you'll find lots of great resources there. We, as I said, we also train a lot of other agencies on our methodology. And so you can go down that path if you happen to be somebody that's in the marketing world and serving your customers.
I really appreciate you doing this with us today, John. Thank you for the time.
You bet. My pleasure.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.